You're listening to Morning Edition on WNYC. With the new year fast approaching, it's the perfect time to look back at 2011 and what it meant for New York. Here to help us put the year in perspective is Joyce Pernick, WNYC's political analyst. Good morning, Joyce.
Good morning.
In government, politics, education, the arts, which fields were busiest this past year?
Are you kidding? This is New York. All of the above. And as always, New York drew international attention. The world watched as the city observed the 10th anniversary of 9/11 and debuted the 9/11 memorial. The world also watched the arrest and subsequent release of Dominique Strauss-Kahn, the former head of the International Monetary Fund, who was accused of sexually assaulting an immigrant hotel housekeeper.
And then there was the emergence, of course, of the Occupy Wall Street movement.
Absolutely. It really started here. I mean, that was a story that was waiting to happen in New York. We've got the largest, greatest disparity between rich and poor in all of the country. And so Occupy Wall Street, the Occupy Wall Street phenomenon, I think it really tested the patience of the demonstrators, and it tested the patience of New Yorkers and the mettle of Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Now, of course, Mayor Bloomberg eventually did clear Zuccotti Park of the protesters' encampment, but not all local politicians made it through the year, right?
Boy, I'll say, who can forget, although I think many of us would like to, that New York lost a congressman and a mayoral contender. That was when Democrat Anthony Weiner of Queens and Brooklyn had to resign because of a so-called sexting scandal. But on a lighter note, we were treated to the on-again, off-again spectacle this past year of Broadway's Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah. And Spider-Man, I guess its ultimate success has a lot to do with tourism, which I gather was healthy over the past year. What about the economy overall?
Well, as we've seen for a while, the city has had a shorter and less severe downturn than most other places in the country. That's really because of the basic nature of our economy and because we have fewer houses and more apartments, so we weren't hit as badly by the housing troubles that hit the rest of the country. We're also lucky because job creation is up over the last year and unemployment is up, which is actually, this will sound weird, but it's a good thing. It means more people are job hunting, or so the economists tell me. The state, however, beyond the city and its suburbs, and most especially upstate, is hurting really badly.
Yet there's a sense of optimism emanating from Albany, don't you think?
Sotiris, I would put it another way. There is a sense that someone is in charge up there for the very first time in a very long time. It was not long before the new governor, Andrew Cuomo, not long after he was inaugurated in January, that he made it clear that he really meant business. Cuomo immediately pledged not to raise taxes on millionaires, and within months he led the fight to bring gay marriage to New York with a very helpful push from Mayor Bloomberg. The state legislature voted last June to make New York the sixth and largest state in the country to legalize same-sex marriage.
And then there was that tax issue.
What he managed to do, and this was really fascinating for politics watchers, he made his flip-flop on tax increases look like an athletic feat. I mean, I think with the economy in trouble, he realized that he never should have pledged to protect the wealthiest New Yorkers from a tax increase. He had to renege. But he raised taxes on less on the rich than they had feared, and he reduced taxes on most people in the middle class. So he won plaudits for changing his mind, which is quite a trick for a politician.
Do you think Cuomo is emerging as a national figure the same way New Jersey's Chris Christie has on the Republican side?
You know, I think it's much too early to predict that. Cuomo is still new in office. A lot can go wrong. And his insistence on managing the message, working in secret, and trying to manipulate media coverage, that has a way of backfiring. But he is definitely off to a strong start, no question.
All right, let's look at Cuomo's city counterpart, Mayor Michael Bloomberg. What was 2011 like for him?
Oh, boy. 2011 started out really, really badly for him. He was coming off an abysmal failure after last year's bad snowstorm. Of course, that's we all remember when his administration botched the cleanup and when leadership from City Hall was non-existent. You may recall Bloomberg was in Bermuda, though nobody knew that for sure. Deputy Mayor Stephen Goldsmith, supposedly in charge, was in Washington, and nobody else stepped up. It was a terrible mess, and it was more than an inconvenience. Some people died because they could not get emergency help.
And there was more bad news for the mayor even after that snowstorm, right?
Yeah, for sure. Bloomberg was roundly criticized for bad judgment about staff. In November of last year, he named a friend, a magazine executive with absolutely no education experience, Kathleen Black, to be the city school's chancellor. She lasted a very short time. 5 months later, she had to resign. She couldn't make the job work. And over the summer, Deputy Mayor Stephen Goldsmith also resigned. Most thought it was because of his bad handling of the snowstorm, but it also turns out that 5 days before his resignation, he had been arrested and jailed in Washington, D.C. in connection with domestic violence. His wife had filed a complaint.
So would you say 2011 was a bad year for Bloomberg?
You know, it sure started out that way. He was really bleeding from self-inflicted wounds. He seemed to be yet another victim of those third-term blues. There was, after the Black and Goldsmith debacles, a ticket-fixing scandal in the police department, too. But the mayor made something of a comeback late in the year. He was omnipresent during Tropical Storm Irene's August visit to New York. In fact, he took so many over-the-top precautions that he came in for criticism for doing too much. But better more than less, Irene spared the city her worst. So most New Yorkers took the mayor's hyperactivity in stride. And then, just as the year was about over, Bloomberg really pulled off two major coups.
And what were those two coups?
Well, he became the first mayor in at least four to actually reform the city taxi industry. He did it by engineering a very clever end run around the taxi-friendly city council. And he got the state legislature to pass a bill that authorizes livery cars to pick up street hails in northern Manhattan and in the boroughs. And after a long, painful negotiation with Governor Cuomo, Cuomo agreed to sign the legislation. And then, underscoring his reputation for innovation, Bloomberg announced that Cornell University will build a really ambitious technology and engineering campus on city-owned land on Roosevelt Island.
Now, are those two things actually, you know, sure things? Are they going to really happen?
When it comes to land use in New York, nothing is ever sure. There are always risks and unknowables. And it will take 30 years. Imagine that, 30 years before the Cornell campus will be fully built. It will also cost the city $100 million in infrastructure money. And the deal itself is a gamble because the mayor is gambling that this is the best and most lucrative use of precious, that's really precious given the state of the city, city-owned land. So we don't really know. We may never fully know if this was the best decision. The taxi deal requires the continuing and long-term cooperation of Governor Cuomo, who is not, to put it mildly, a big Bloomberg fan, and the feeling is quite mutual. But with Congress and much of the country stalled and unable to get anything done, Sotirios, New York is showing some of the moxie that used to be its core identity.
Thanks so much, Joyce.
Thank you, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. WNYC's political analyst, Joyce Pernick. You're listening to Morning Edition on WNYC.